Thank you. 대장고 김은한데.
When I first began seriously planting in the university, when I was in the university in Buffalo, New York, it's such a cold place, very, very, very cold place. And the winters there were so cold, I don't know how to calculate it. In centigrade, but it was like minus 40. It was so cold, and the snow was as high as the sky, at least. It was so cold, and I remember coming into our first little temple there and drinking hot dal. And oh, I remember thinking, when it's so cold, hot dal is so good. So I'm also thinking that when it's thundering and lightning and raining here, a nice kirtan where everyone is chanting so enthusiastically is at least as good as hot dal in the cold Buffalo winter. It warms the heart and gives one strength. Om Aginatam Inandasya Dhanam Dhanam Salakaya Chakshu Samilitam Jainat Tasmai Sri Gurave Nama Sri Chaitanya Mahavishtam Stapitam Jainabhutale Swayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Sapandantikam Vansha Kalpa Tuvyascha Kripa Sindhu Vayavacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnava Yonamo Nama. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, just after Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas, he went to Jagannath Puri, and in Jagannath Puri he had a particular mission to perform, and that mission was to changed the heart of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, who was the leading priest. He was the king's priestly advisor. So when Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, who was such a powerful person and a famous scholar, he was famous all over India actually, when he became a devotee of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then practically speaking, all the people in Jagannath Puri also became devotees. But within a few weeks after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, after he got there and associated with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and the other devotees in Jagannath Puri, he left. He decided that he would go on tour of South India, in South India. So the Chaitanya Charitamrita describes the scene that's so touching, actually, how how Kosavabhauma Bhattacharya and the other devotees in Jagannath Puri, they felt that they had gained the most valuable jewel in the form of the association of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And just after 2 weeks or 4 weeks, he was leaving. And that made them feel, and this is a good night to use this example, if there's lightning, suddenly, by the power of that lightning, there's illumination. Everything becomes bright and you can see everything, even on the darkest night. But then, that lightning flashes just for a moment, and then everything appears even darker than before. This was, practically speaking, intolerable for the residents of Jagannath Puri and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. But they could do nothing about it because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he is Swatantra. He is the, what is, he's not there in the usual seat. Where? Oh, Swatantra. Independent. He's supremely independent. That's what it means to be the Supreme Lord. Independent. Everyone else is dependent. And everyone wants to be independent, but no one is independent. When we get more and more independent, we get more and more lonely, basically, that's all, and feel more and more incomplete. Ice, yes? Oh, nice. Ice is nice. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, all the devotees were there with him, and they went to I can't remember the name of the village. They went to one place. But in any case, Mahaprabhu started to leave. And all the devotees, they fainted. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya fainted. Because it was like his life had left his body. So, such an extreme experience. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had, he was very strong and independent. So he kept going. But it describes when he had left the devotees, he felt very sad inside. He missed them. But yet he had to go. Now, as he was going, and this was more the what I wanted to start talking about, as he was going, he sang, and this was the he sang this continuously as he was traveling, because he was going to travel. Does anyone know how long he traveled for?
6 years.
Huh? Okay, both of you are right. 6 years and 2 years. Because if you take 6 years and divide it by three, it's 2 years. And that's how long he traveled to South India for, as Prabhu said. So they did not see him for 2 years, and continuously they were thinking, when will he return? When will he return? Only they were thinking that. So, but as he was traveling, he in the Supreme Lord in the role of a sannyasi, a wandering mendicant who was completely depending on Krishna. And this is, he had one piece of cloth, he had nothing but one set change of clothes. That's all he carried with him. No mobile phone, no credit cards, food, no GPS, no. He had GPS actually. Guru Parampara system. But this in one sense is the ideal life for developing one's relationship with Krishna, that just one goes and does something in Krishna's service and just fully depends on Krishna. Because there's a tendency in everyone to gather things around them to make sure that I'm going to be protected, just in case. And when I'm on my own, I'm always holding on tighter to these things. Yes, I'll depend on Krishna, but just in case, I hold on to everything else. And what's the everything else? Of course, this is a sort of a gross example. Here's my bag and all the things I really need in life. And some extra things too, perhaps. But what do I hold on to? The things that that have served me well in this life, that have given me shelter in this life, my strength, whatever, intelligence, beauty, influence, anything. I hold on to these things because I feel that they are my security, my safety. But the goal of this sannyas order, especially, but really the goal of everyone's life, is to learn this art of depending fully upon Krishna. Because ultimately, regardless of our position in life, no matter whether we are strong or weak, intelligent or a bit less, or beautiful or what's the opposite? Huh? Beautiful? We don't want to say that. But funny looking? No, that's not very nice either. But having some homely. Oh, that, yes, that's a very nice homely. One time, Prabhupada was, I don't know, the way I heard the story, he was in some place, and there were some cows. And one of the devotees said to Prabhupada, the cows are so beautiful. And Prabhupada looked at him and said, cows are not beautiful, they're homely. Horses are beautiful. Horses are graceful. Yes? Cows are homely. So in any case, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as he was going, and this is what this is really what everyone really needs to learn, the art of depending on Krishna. Because when it's time to leave this world, and that time, unfortunately, or fortunately, is going to come to each and every single person. Now, what is going to give us shelter at that time? Certainly, all the things that we tend to depend on in life tend to depend on life when we're in difficulty. You know, we just name some of them, beginning with the mobile phone. Because really, today, and when you're leaving the house, unless you have your mobile phone and your credit cards with you, I mean, everyone is feeling, what's going to happen? Well, my an atomic bomb drops on your head or something like that. No, at least I have my mobile phone with me. But where, so all the things that we look towards to for shelter in this world, and if they are of this world, they cannot actually award us shelter. They turn out to be, the Sanskrit word for shelter is asraya, and durasraya means false shelter. So there are so many false shelters that we that appear to us as substantial. So when one is traveling in the way that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu traveled, there is a very conscious effort to give up false shelters and to take shelter of that shelter which is true, which is strong, which is eternal, which is always with us, which is Krishna. So while Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was traveling, he would sing a song. So we will sing that now, and it's so simple that everyone will be able to accompany us, and especially if we happen to play the harmonium, we'll be able to accompany us. And clockwise, too. So we can sing it line by line.
Krishna, 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 Krishna.
in all circumstances, he was chanting. And in this way, he was feeling the presence of Krishna in the form of his holy names, but also he understood that Krishna was protecting him. And the reality of the situation is that Rakhe Krishna Mare Ke, Mare Krishna Rakhe Ke. That unless Krishna protects us, we don't have any protection, factually speaking. Of course, we defend ourselves when attacked, etc., etc. But unless Krishna sanctions the defense or the protection, we have no defense or protection. So this same concept, but developed even more philosophically, was explained by Kunti Devi, a very famous character in the Mahabharata and in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Kunti Devi had 5 wonderful sons known as the Pandavas. And her husband passed away. So she always, on one level, took shelter of her sons. It was completely natural. But her sons, and Yudhisthira Maharaj, we all know the different pastimes and stories. Yudhisthira was to be the king, but he was cheated out of the kingdom, and he was exiled. And all the Pandavas, Kunti and her sons, were exiled out of the palace and had to wander without being recognized for so many years. But Kunti Devi and the Pandavas were great devotees. What does it mean to be a great devotee? What does it mean to be a holy person? It means that as one goes through life and meets one's fate, meets one's destiny, that one, regardless of whether his destiny is good or bad, or mixed, and everyone's destiny, fate, is mixed, different proportions of good and bad, of pain, of suffering, of pleasure, of happiness. Everyone has this mixed fate. So a holy person is a person who, at every turn of his life, he takes shelter of Krishna. Whether the circumstance is good, whether the circumstance is bad, whether it's mixed, whether it looks good in the beginning, whether it turns to bad, whether everyone is coughing all at once or gradually in staggered times. It's funny how coughing is catching. Did you ever notice that? And yawning, coughing and yawning. If one person, suddenly everyone, I don't know about sneezing, but I know about coughing. Now everyone is being very careful to neither cough nor yawn for fear of starting an epidemic and laughing. See? And not laughing too. So being holy, in one sense, is very simple. Simple to understand, but quite difficult to do. Simple to understand because it's simple. In life, good and bad, always chant Hare Krishna, always remember God, always think oneself insignificant and tiny. It's true. And always pray for protection, always pray for maintenance, always pray for shelter, regardless of the external circumstance. And that actually makes one's consciousness, one's mind, so healthy and so peaceful. It is very easy to understand, but it is not so easy to do. From what I have seen, it is much easier to preach to others than apply this very simple principle when life is turning me upside down. But yet, this is what it means to be holy. And this is the prime sadhana, actually speaking, the prime practice. Gotripte varanam tata. That regardless of circumstances, we chant Krishna's names and take shelter of Krishna. And place ourselves, gotripte varanam tata, means place ourselves under the protection of the Supreme Lord, under Krishna's protection. When we think about it logically, yes, although I feel myself very important or very powerful or influential, I feel myself invulnerable, but it is not true. Practically speaking, we are tiny, we are weak, we are insignificant, and at any time, anything can happen, practically speaking. So it makes obvious sense to take shelter of the Supreme. Now, Kunti Devi, who we were speaking about, while she was with her sons in the forest, as described in the Mahabharata, at every turn of difficulty, Krishna would appear to help them because they were completely dependent upon him. Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, Yeyetam mam prapadyante tamstataiva pajamyaham. Yeyetam mam prapadyante means that everyone accordingly, how I relate with Krishna, he will reciprocate with that individual. So if I completely depend on Krishna, I use my strength, I use my intelligence, I use my ability in a practical way, but I don't depend on my strength and I don't depend on it. I depend on Krishna, because in one second, if Krishna removes that strength, that intelligence, whatever it is that we think is ours, in one second, it can be removed. And then we're left with not knowing who we are, practically speaking. We lose all the things. This is in the words of Bhaktivinoda Sindhu, Nectar Devotion. Sarva upadi vinaya muktam tat paradvena niyamalam. All the overlays on our true self, one by one, all the identities, sense of who I am, I'm the one who can do this, I'm the one who can do that, I'm the one who can do that, I'm the one who can, I'm the one. All these one by one, in time, we will have to leave it behind. We don't take these things with us through the doorway of death. We leave them behind. And if we are thinking ourselves these things, I'm this, I'm the one who does that, when we lose them, we don't know who we are, practically speaking. There was one Mataji who left this world in Vrindavan quite a few years ago. I think there was recently a BTG article about Giriraj Maharaj and an address that he gave, and there's a picture of him feeding Acha Vigraha Mataji a spoonful of water. I think that was like just the morning before she left this world. So we, myself and so many of the devotees, used to sit with her during the day and read to her a bit. And one day, while I was sitting with her, something happened. She was very frail, and I think I touched her about like this. It wasn't hard, and she said to me, "That was so painful." And she said, because she was older, she said, and her husband had passed away quite a few years before. She said, when my husband told me when he was near his ending days that a touch like that could be painful, I could not understand it. But now I understand it. We can't conceive of that now, and it's, how could we live our life if we could conceive of it, practically speaking? How could we live? But every ability, strength, etc., that we consider, that we take for granted, that we consider us, it will be taken in time. It must be taken. It's guaranteed. It will be taken in time. Now, I don't want to depress everyone. The weather is bad enough as it is. But within every cloud, I can't remember the other half of a silver lining. Yes, is that there's something in Hebrew like that? Every cloud? No, I guess not. But there is a blessing in that. And the blessing is that if we learn how to take shelter, if we practice taking shelter of Krishna in difficulty, then when we hold on to him, we will actually get shelter. We won't be illusioned to think that things that won't really give us shelter, that can't give us shelter, that will be taken away, that they will protect us. We won't fall into that illusion if we practice taking shelter of Krishna in life. And what does it mean to take shelter of Krishna? It means, practically speaking, whenever there is any difficulty, pray to Krishna to help you. Krishna, 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 Ratsamam Paima, maintain me. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, I am yours. How can I serve you? It is a practice. Ante Narayana Smriti, and the perfection is to be able to take shelter of Krishna, having practiced so continuously that when it's time to leave this world, when our time comes, we will take shelter of him, and he will hold us so tightly. There are so many stories, pastimes, even in our memory, of devotees who have taken shelter of Krishna and have been amazingly protected by Krishna. So many. And if we don't practice that, what will we take shelter of? So when we practice taking shelter of Krishna, when, like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was wandering, calling out to Krishna at every moment, teaching us by his example, calling out to Krishna every moment, and seeing that Krishna protects, he's actually there, he actually protects, and even though I'm so faulty, and I can't do it everything properly, and even though this, and even, he still takes care of me. And then, when we start understanding that, when we have that in our experience, then we naturally trust enough to surrender and give ourselves to him. Otherwise, if we don't build up that kind of trust, and trust is another way of saying faith, that Krishna is actually there, and I actually have a relationship with him, and he actually has a relationship with me, and he's going to take care of me, and that's his side of the relationship, and my side is to try to please him in my activities and do something for his pleasure instead of being selfishly oriented and frustrated by my selfish activities. I try to do something for Krishna's pleasure. That's my part of the relationship. After all, he's very, very kind. Then the heart becomes softer and we give up some of our selfish self-absorption and we try to do something for Krishna. So Kunti Devi was in a very unique experience. A very unique situation, because they, again, she and her sons, the Pandavas, were cheated out of their kingdom, and they were exiled to the forest for, was it 14 years? Or, and then at some, then the battle of Kurukshetra was fought, and Krishna drove the chariot of Arjuna, and because of Krishna's presence on the side of the Pandavas, and his protection of the Pandavas, the Pandavas won, and Yudhisthira became the king, and then that means that after all those years of suffering, of difficulty, but finding Krishna there at every moment to protect her, then suddenly Kunti Devi was the queen mother and had all opulences at her call. And then, because the mission had been accomplished to establish the Pandavas, then Krishna was going to leave. He had been with them, the Pandavas, because of their difficulties. He was always with them. And now, the difficulties having finished, he was going to leave and return to Dwarka, his capital. So as Krishna got on the chariot, Kunti Devi came to Krishna and said, how are you going to leave? How will I exist? How will I exist without you? And then there were many very wonderful prayers that she spoke. Very, very sweet, very affectionate. They were pleased. There is a Sanskrit word, prarthana. Prarthana means a heart's appeal. So she was appealing to Krishna, please, don't leave us now without you. Yes, we have our kingdom. But she says in one verse, as the name and fame of a particular body is finished with the disappearance of the living spirit, similarly, if you do not look upon us, without your glance on us, all our fame, myself and my glorious sons, the Pandavas, all of our fame will end at once, just as when the life leaves the body, everything connected to the body, any opulence also leaves. So please don't leave. We are dependent on you. Oh Krishna, our kingdom is now being marked by the impressions of your lotus feet. Your footprints are throughout our kingdom. And therefore it appears beautiful. It is because of you walking here in our kingdom. It is beautiful. But if you leave, it is like the beauty being withdrawn and nothing beautiful will be here, nothing attractive will be here. So in this way, many, many prayers she offered that are full of meaning and very beautiful as well. But I just wanted to, following the thoughts on turning to Krishna for protection that we were speaking of, I wanted to read two of the earlier prarthana appeals, prayerful appeals that she made. She says, just two. Viparasantu tasasva tatra tatra jagat guru bhavato darshanam yatsyat apuna bhavadarsanam. See, this is the nature of the material world. One minute it's the storm and the hail is coming, and the next minute it's peaceful. And then we go, but then the next minute the storm and the hail comes. It's always shifting. If it was always storming and hailing, we'd get used to it. But it's the constant shifting nature of the material nature that it is so unsettling. And we think and we try to organize our life in such a way that everything will be smooth and perfect, without understanding that it is the very nature of the material world that is unsettling and full of difficulty. It's the very nature. It's like trying to remove wetness from water or something like that. It just can't be done. So to try to organize our life in such a way so everything is just right is just wrong. It just won't happen. So Kunti Devi, understanding the nature of the material world, understanding the nature of Krishna, understanding the nature of Krishna's shelter, understanding the nature of Krishna's continuous protection of the Pandavas and her because of their continuous devotion to him in good and bad. At every moment they were devoted to him. So therefore she says, because now Krishna is leaving and now they're in an quote ideal situation, she's the queen mother, she said, I wish that all the calamities would happen again and again, because you're leaving now. Because the calamities have ended. My son is the king. My other sons are the princes. I'm the queen mother. No more calamities, but you're leaving. And that I consider the greatest calamity. Or I consider that the only calamity. I'm not directly, this is exactly what she's saying, but I'm putting more into it. I wish that those calamities, vipara means difficulty, calamity, danger. I wish those calamities would happen again and again so that we could see you again and again, because you are always there, because our hearts have opened to you and are pulling you, because we have no one else. So not that she likes suffering, but yes, that she likes Krishna. And whatever situation brings her close to Krishna, she finds that wonderful. So we can just imagine how wonderful being with Krishna is, that it makes a calamity appear wonderful and preferable to a perfect situation. Just imagine how wonderful it is to be with Krishna and to be secure and fixed in that relationship with Krishna. Again, it makes the calamities appear fortunate, because it is due to the calamities that I'm calling for Krishna and holding him, and he is reciprocating because he is my only shelter. So I wish that all those calamities would happen again and again so that we could see you again and again. And bhavato darshanam yatsat, by seeing you, by having your darshan, then apuna, never again, bhava darshanam, never again will birth and death touch me. If I can just continuously and only cling to you. And then I'll read some of Prabhupada's purport here. For a pious person, if there is some calamity, there is no other alternative than to take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. Constantly remembering the lotus feet of the Lord means preparing for liberation, freedom from birth and death. Therefore, even though there are so-called calamities, they are welcome because they give us an opportunity to remember the Lord, which means liberation, freedom from all difficulty. One who has taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, which are accepted as the most suitable boat for crossing the ocean of nescience, ignorance. Such a person can achieve liberation as easily as one leaps over the holes made by the hoofs of a calf. Such persons are meant to reside in the abode of the Lord, and they have nothing to do with a place where there is danger in every step. Padam, padam, yan, vipadam, natesha. The duty of a sane person is to be undisturbed by worldly calamities. What do you think about that? In other words, a sane person is one who is deep, because one will have to be deep to be undisturbed, because calamity means calamity. It's not difficulty. It's not difficulty. It's calamity, disaster. So to be undisturbed in a disaster means that your shelter or holding tightly to Krishna is so complete, it is so deep, that this great tidal wave of difficulty doesn't touch you at your deepest core. And that is what a holy person is. And that, Prabhupada says, indirectly, is what a sane person is. That he defines as sane. And to not be like that would be its opposite, which is insane. Yes. The duty of the sane person, therefore, is to be undisturbed by worldly calamities, because it's unavoidable. We have to meet our fate, and although our fate isn't always calamity, but it's always unsteady. The duty of the sane person is to be undisturbed by worldly calamities, which are sure to happen in all circumstances. Suffering all kinds of unavoidable misfortunes. That's such an interesting phrase. Suffering all kinds of unavoidable misfortunes. In other words, we don't just look for trouble because we don't have to. It comes of its own. We avoid that which is avoidable, but even if we're trying our best to avoid difficulty, it will meet us. So, suffering all kinds of unavoidable misfortunes, one should make progress in spiritual realization, because this is the mission of human life. This is the purpose of our life. We have introspective, self-conscious awareness and intelligence, and we know when we're in difficulty, and we know, and we can see, we can train, we should train ourselves that when there's difficulty to take shelter of Krishna, to call out to Krishna. We can see when we're not doing that very well. Like when one goes to school and gets an examination, the main person who's supposed to benefit from the examination is the student. It's actually assessment, a self-assessment. It's actually for the student to see how well he understands the material that is being presented. So similarly, as we go throughout every single day of our life, we meet a combination of favorable, unfavorable, mixed, this is good and this is not so good and this is disturbing and this didn't happen the way I want. We meet all these different varieties of circumstances, and we should be introspective, self-examining enough to see how we are doing in the sense of how well we are taking shelter of Krishna, or looking at it from a slightly different point of view. When things don't go our way, what do we take shelter of? And we can see, is that really going to give me shelter? Gone is the peace, and here comes the hail again. It's life. Because this is actually the purpose of life. To learn this art of always taking shelter of Krishna, to surrender. And that, in the language of Srila Jiva Goswami, this turning towards Krishna, now we are turned away from Krishna, this turning towards Krishna is the purpose of sadhana bhakti, the practices. That's the purpose of it, to turn towards Krishna. So Kunti Devi, amazingly enough to me, she's saying, I prefer the difficult situation, because in that difficult situation, we are continuously calling out to you, I want that, because you're always reciprocating with our humble appeal to you for protection and care and maintenance. And now this circumstance, which superficially is perfect, it's not at all appealing to me at all. I want you. Don't leave, Krishna. Don't leave. Don't leave us now. Don't let us think that your your mission to protect us is now done. We continuously and only need your protection. Don't leave us. Don't leave us. Because for a devotee to be out, for the Lord to leave is like the life leaving the body. And the next verse, also very famous. Janmai swaya sutashi bire dhamana mana pumam na eva arhati abhidattum vai tvam makinchana gochara. O Lord, he says, you can easily be approached, but only by those who are materially exhausted. Tvam akinchana gochara, who possess nothing in the material world. Previously, or one could say traditionally, holy persons were completely renounced, detached. Well, this is the picture we have of a holy person. He's detached, renounced from any dealings with the world of matter. He doesn't possess anything of this world. His time is spent just calling out to the Lord. They would even voluntarily accept poverty, like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, just wandering for the purpose of depending on Krishna in his service. But there are different kinds of persons who are materially impoverished. Prabhupada once spoke of two kinds. One was a complete renunciant, like the spiritual master of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, whose name was Srila Gokashor Das Babaji. He had no possessions. He would just wander. He would wander to Vrindavan. He would wander to Bengal. He possessed nothing practically. Nothing, nothing, nothing. And yet he was always taken care of. His wealth was his chanting of the holy names of Krishna. He used to chant. He didn't even have a set of beads. He had a rope that he had knots in that he would chant. And then when he got to Navadvipa, I believe he gave that away. He would just chant and chant and chant and chant. It cannot be imitated. a complete renunciant. But Prabhupada explained another kind of renunciant was his own spiritual master, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who built a marble palace, he explained, for Krishna in Calcutta. But he didn't think it was his own. It was for Krishna. And he himself did not hold on to anything in the material world in the same way that his spiritual master, the illustrious Kaukasura Das Babaji Maharaj, didn't touch anything of the material world. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and our Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada had millions of dollars, but then he went to, in the last year of his life, he went to Bhuvaneswar to do some preaching there. And he was living in a little hut and bathing by the pump with a bucket of water, still getting up so early, preaching all day long, etc., 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 not touching the material world in any way, practically speaking. So two different kinds of renunciants. So, your lordship can be easily approached, but only by one who is materially exhausted, meaning one who is not trying to hold tightly on to anything in this world of matter, subtle or gross, whose full attention and both hands are holding on Krishna as his only shelter. Easily approach, but if one hand is holding on to so many material things for me, or both hands holding on and saying, and was at the same time trying to hold on to Krishna, it's very difficult, obviously. You have to put this down to hold on to this. One who is on the path of material progress, trying to improve himself with respectable parentage, great opulence, high education, and bodily beauty. One who is taking shelter of these things as his pleasure and shelter. They cannot call out to you with sincere feeling of Krishna, you are everything to me. If we hold on to the items of this material world, we cannot hold on to Krishna with the same intensity as if we weren't at the same time holding on to matter. We cannot hold this with both hands tightly if we're holding so many other things. But not in the sense of can't do it, that you can't do it, you can't do it, you cannot do it. Not in that sense. But the sincerity can't be brought to the heart if we haven't fully taken shelter of Krishna. We can't fully take shelter of him. We don't have that sincere feeling. So Prabhupada's purport here is very powerful. I'll just read a little of it. So it's not an injunction. You can't do this if you have to give up all your or otherwise we're not going to let you. And not like that at all. Here's what one of the things that Prabhupada says in this purport. By being materially advanced means taking birth in an aristocratic good family, possessing great wealth and education, and an attractive personal beauty. All materialistic men are mad after possessing all these material opulences. And this is known as the advancement of material civilization, where everyone is, their whole life is trying to accumulate more and more and more of these, of things on this level. But the result is that by possessing all these material assets, one becomes artificially puffed up, proud, intoxicated by such temporary possessions. Consequently, such materially puffed up persons are incapable of uttering the holy name of the Lord by addressing him feelingly, O Govinda, O Krishna. It is said in the Shastras that by once uttering the holy name of the Lord, the sinner gets rid of a quantity of sins more than he is capable of committing. Such is the power of uttering the holy name of the Lord. There is not the least exaggeration in this statement. Actually, the Lord's holy name has such powerful potency. But there is a quality to such utterances also. It depends on the quality of feeling, Prabhupada says. A helpless man can feelingly utter the holy name of the Lord, whereas a man who utters the same holy name in great material satisfaction cannot be so sincere. It's like when if you are very, 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 very hungry, you can call for food very sincerely, but after you've just eaten a big feast, you can't have the same intensity in your desire. So if one looks to Krishna as his only shelter, the Supreme Lord, it will have an intensity, just like the baby's cry. Oma, could you just pinch your baby for a second so we can have an active... No. You wouldn't for a moment do it anyway. But when the babies cry and they want their mother or father, when they really, really want it, that cry is piercingly powerful. And one can't hold back. No one can concentrate on anything else, practically speaking, because they only want, well, they want mother, and they want mother now. And it's so powerful. And then they have a different kind of cry where they sort of just maybe just want their mother, but not so much. They're just sort of, and it doesn't have the same intensity. They're crying, but it doesn't have the same intensity. We can hear the difference. So when we're sincerely, full-heartedly calling for Krishna as our only shelter, he can hear it, and he immediately reciprocates. And as every parent knows, they know how to distinguish between these two different cries. You can hear it. So similarly, Krishna, when we don't really mean it, he says, okay, here. Have a new mobile phone, a new iPhone instead. Be happy with that for it. It's like giving the little child, what do they call them here? What do they call the child? In the United States, they call them pacifiers. But in Australia, they call them dummies. Is that more? Which is nice because... Anyway, if you take that, you're a dummy. What can one say? No, but it's not the real thing. That's what it means. Okay. So, not that we shouldn't possess things, but we shouldn't think those things are our shelter. We should call out to Krishna and make Krishna our shelter. And we will be happy if we did. Okay, thank you. Any questions or comments? It's already after 8. Yes?
Sometimes for me there is, it doesn't go together, the asking for maintenance and the asking for spiritual advance. It looks like two different things for me.
Yeah. But who's maintaining you? So it's an acknowledgement of it. It's an acknowledgement of the reality. Otherwise, there's such a strong tendency to think I'm the one who's maintaining me. It is by my power, my abilities, my intelligence, my great beauty, etc. that I'm therefore I'm maintaining myself. So this is acknowledging our relationship with Krishna as he is the one who's maintaining me. And therefore I am dependent upon him and I am surrendered to him. And he is the one who's protecting me. And let me serve him. Some appreciation. Is that okay? Get, keep asking.
But to ask for it.
That's why I said to acknowledge it. Who is going to acknowledge it in that mood? I'm dependent on you, Krishna. I'm calling your names. I'm completely dependent on you. If you want to maintain me, that's another way to look at it. He's teaching us. But if you want to maintain me, you can make whatever you give me, I accept. I am yours. That's more directly the way we understand the mood. Whatever you give me to maintain me, it is your kindness. Otherwise I start thinking that whatever I have, whatever Krishna is giving me, is not enough. Why doesn't he give me more? And it's this person's fault and that person's fault. More and more and more. But another way is to be satisfied with what we have. It's Krishna's kindness and arrangement. Of course, you can take anything to an extreme. Because if you need something, you endeavor for it. Practically. So there's some basic principles that we're supposed to be learning here. Is that all right? Or keep asking? Because we don't want to ask Krishna for maintain us, yes. But yet we don't want to fail to acknowledge that he is maintaining us. Because that would lead to ungratefulness. But so often I don't think of him as maintaining me. I think I'm maintaining me, and it's because of my strength and my intelligence and my birth and because I did this. And I did that because, therefore, I look at these people, they don't have enough, they're not, because they're not as strong, intelligent, etc. as me. These thoughts go through the conditioned soul's mind. You know, you follow what I mean?
What about those exalted devotees like Kunti? They had difficulties, but they had Krishna. So why did they pray for... Why those difficulties look to them like difficulties?
But we see how it looks to us. She prefers, for her, difficulty is not being with Krishna. That's what she's saying. That's what the real difficulty is. Everything else is fine as long as I'm with Krishna. She's redefining what difficulty really means. I can tolerate everything willingly, happily. I prefer those terrible circumstances as long as you're there with me. So such depth of devotion, we can't imitate that. I don't personally find it easy to pray for difficulties. Life is already fine enough. Don't need to, but the point is wonderful. Just imagine how wonderful it is to be so intimately in relationship with Krishna that giving that up is intolerable, and everything else is tolerable, and not even a difficulty, practically speaking. Just imagine how wonderful it is in Krishna's association. So we want to gain that association. Is that okay? Anything else?
It's also like the devotees in Vrindavan, they had difficulties, they also praised him. Like the forest fire, or Nanda Maharaj when he was eaten by the snake.
Because they had heard that Gagacharya Gagamuni had said, Anena Sarva Durgani Yunjanyasya Tirashiti, that your son Krishna will, when you're in difficulty, he will always be the one who protects you. So they always took shelter of Krishna. They were very simple hearted, and they took shelter of Krishna. Yeah, how wonderful. At any time, the cowherd boys, they walked into the Agasura's mouth and they thought, maybe it is a snake, but anyway, Krishna will take care of us. It's such trust in Krishna. So for them, there is no circumstance was fearful, practically speaking, except when Krishna left. Then it was like their life leaving their bodies. See, and you have a wonderful children now. And on one level, if we look at it from the philosophical level, you can't protect them. So what your job is, so to speak, your service is to give them so much love and affection now so that they grow up so secure and sure of protection that when it comes to learning to how to depend on Krishna, they can make that jump very easily. The purpose of society and good parenting and actually having good government rulers and good priests and rabbis and all the people in position of society, they all have they all represent Krishna in people's psychology. They're authority figures. So when they are all good, as in society they should be good, then it's very easy for people to have a trust and take shelter of Krishna. But when those figures in society turn out to be act improperly and are corrupt, etc., then it very much hurts the psychology and makes it harder for people to trust Krishna. So, you follow what I mean? It makes it harder. So the material part of life, it's so important that it's organized properly so that it will facilitate the spiritual part of life. So then, what do you do if in Kali Yuga, most people's one time I was in a shop in the United States many, many years ago, and I heard, and it just had come out, there was so much scandal amongst the priests. They had done so many things many, many years ago. It just had just come out. Terrible things to the children. So I heard one shopkeeper very sarcastically saying to one of the customers, she asked a question about some product, and the shopkeeper said, "Trust me, I'm a priest." And it was just very, very sarcastic, you know, meaning to say that it doesn't mean anything, you know, I'm untrustworthy. And that made me feel so sad to hear that, actually, because who are naturally figures of trust in society are mocked for their corruption, like the presidents and prime ministers. It's not like people feel their protective shelter like your children feel your protective shelter. We don't feel that way about the prime ministers and presidents, and we're supposed to. That's the natural order of society. So it's very sad in Kali Yuga because no one has it. We laugh at the politicians. They prove themselves again and again to be corrupt, and etc., etc., not only the politicians. So what to do when the software, so to speak, in our consciousness, of our conditioning, makes it so difficult for us to trust and surrender to Krishna, to God. So therefore some special mercy is needed, and we have the Sankirtan, the chanting of Krishna's holy names in a group, because it causes whatever one's mood is or mind is, if we chant long enough, the kirtan so deeply affects us. And even for a few moments, there's a taste of what spiritual life, real life really is. Any other questions or comments? Yes.
Yes, there's the initial step of being a yogi, doing the things, doing the practice. And I'm in the past in the state of trying to get more to bhakti, more to addressing myself to Krishna, more to devotion. And I find myself in a permanent question when I'm praying, when I'm asking for something, when I'm telling something, is there really somebody who is listening? Is there really somebody up there or inside of me, around me, that considers himself as something to do with the name Krishna? Was there any real boy of blue colored skin?
And very beautiful.
Yeah, who committed the miracles.
And
I mean,
takes care of cows also.
And all this belief and all this devotion, is it related to my psychology or to the real life, to my existence?
Yes.
How do I know?
Well, you won't know for sure by asking me. That won't. I suggest you go to Vrindavan for some time. It's very, very amazing there. I mean, that's the kind of question that you won't, most likely you won't accept someone else's answer for. You have to have the experience yourself, and that's why, like in those days, in those times, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, showing the example, took sannyas, going out there and taking that step in Krishna's direction and seeing if there's a reciprocation. Am I going to be protected? Am I going to be maintained? Or am I going to find myself starving to death on the street and not being protected at all while I'm calling out to him? So once one has the experience, and if, when it happens, say, one time, and then you think, oh, maybe this is just chance. Then it happens again. And then when you feel that the touch of Krishna's hand upon your head many, many times, you start thinking that I'm not imagining it. And others may say, well, it's just this and it's just that. But you'll have to answer that for yourself to some degree. But you have to take a step towards Krishna to find out. And I think you're doing that by, you've taken a step. Certainly by certainly coming here. So maybe it takes time. Maybe it happens quickly. That's up between you and Krishna. But it's such an exciting journey. What else in life is worth that has this kind of excitement to find out if Krishna is really going to take care of you? And the point being that at the time of death, you want to have the question answered very firmly and surely and fixed in your mind. So that's what life is for. Human life is for finding this out. You know, in previous times, people were simpler, and they naturally had more trust. They saw it so clearly that of course there's a Supreme Lord, of course. But those simpler times are long gone. So now we have to struggle with these doubts and etc. etc. So we applaud your effort and keep going and associate with devotees who are more further advanced on the line than you. And faith is like the common cold; it's catching. Is that all right?
Yes.
Yes.
It's very important in spiritual life that we, in the process, we want the good, the welfare of others, and we practice to be servants. But most of the time, if we go deeply, we find that there's a little bit of false ego in that idea. That I'm okay. I want the good and welfare of others, but in somewhere there's a place that it's for me, for my. So how can we cultivate and practice in a way that becomes practically and naturally?
How to become purified, in other words, because. Because selfishness doesn't bring us happiness. So what you're asking is how to remove the selfishness from the heart. Even so first, when we learn the art of making believe that we're selfless, we learn how to do that with the external, say. And we learn how to serve prasadam and take last and or something like that. We learn how to do so many things. But as you're saying, that there's still some selfishness in the heart. So your question is how to remove that. So that's what following the process means. It generally speaking, it's not all or nothing. It's a gradual process. And when one is sincerely trying, Krishna so often points out one's faults to oneself. Maybe others can't see what Krishna is doing, but one sees it oneself. And then the next step, if one is fortunate enough to see one's fault and one's selfishness, is to become a little more humble. So it's like having a room that's dirty, hasn't been cleaned in so long. So it's not that just by wanting it to be clean, it's automatically clean. It takes time. So if someone is in the process, of cleaning the room, we can't criticize them for having a dirty room. If someone is in the shower, we don't criticize them for being dirty. They're in the process. So it's very. So the most important thing on one level is to take to the process, because the process of purification, there's the external practices and then there's the internal going on. The external part everyone can see, but the internal part is very much between us and Krishna. So depending upon our advancement or our sincerity, we're doing the internal work along with the external practices. But from what I've seen, one can't continue for very, very continuously go on, do the externals without doing the internal work. There's just not enough pleasure in it. And so often we come to obstacles. You know, suddenly we see that there's something there that we were imagining. We were so pure and so wonderful, and then suddenly we the light goes on a little more, and we see that there's a monster in there too. So, and then we have to deal with that, you know, and how to deal with it. You know, it has so much to do with sincere chanting and prayer and humility, and that's why Mahaprabhu said. That why is humility so important, and what's the connection with humility and Kirtaniya Sadahari, constantly chanting Krishna's names? Because unless we really feel like we need shelter, we won't be able to constantly chant. Unless we continuously feel that unless Krishna is merciful to me and kind to me and protects me and maintains me, I don't have any hope, then we won't be able to chant continuously. So that's actually something very mysterious, that out of the feeling of weakness comes the greatest strength, and the greatest strength comes from taking shelter of Krishna. And this is common in, you know, in all real religious paths, this point. That's a nice ringtone. I like it. I mean, it's not as good as like a cow ringtone, but it's quite pleasing. And the other point on that is that... Oh, never mind the other point. That was enough. Is that okay? I think it's... Yes.
At the beginning of the class, you mentioned about independence, that everybody in the world is thinking that he is independent.
Yes.
Can you explain the materialistic, let's say a successful materialistic person, how is it that he thinks that he is independent?
Will a successful materialistic person be proud? They have to. They've accomplished so much. According, they're proud. Proud means they think they're better than others. They look and see that these other people haven't. So there has to be. There will be some pride there. Because he thinks he's done it himself. Based on him, but in 1 second, it could be gone. So. It's not happening just by me. We may have some piety and some ability and strength. These people are so intelligent, usually. But in 1 second, if the Supreme Lord wishes to withdraw that ability, they have nothing. They're left with nothing. Nothing. They cannot move. They cannot think. They cannot talk. Is that what you're asking about?
Yeah, I'm trying to. It's not independent because it's just the karma going.
There's karma, and also it's ultimately Krishna. So any intelligent person who is accomplishing something is dependent, and even the greatest scientists. It's not like they think their way through their great experiments. When one reads about how they get when the light goes on in their consciousness and they understand something, it's inspiration almost every time. There's a flash of inspiration. So where does that come from? And then they write a paper about it, a scientific paper, but it's actually coming from an inspiration. Where does the ability to think on such a deep scientific level comes from? Did you create you? You just suddenly, when you're 16 or something, you wake up and you find out that you're you. Where did you come from? Where did that you come from? Where did your abilities come from? We're proud of something that's a gift. It's our karma, but we can also look at it as a gift. And that gifts can be withdrawn. So an intelligent, pious person is grateful and humble. The greatest scientists are humble. It's just a little sort of the mediocre ones who are proud. The real geniuses, they're humble because they look at what they know compared to what reality is, and they see that, well, I'm just on the shore of the ocean. What do you think?
Yeah.
Okay, because it's getting late. Why don't we just have another little kirtan? Thank you very much. And there's also a saying, I don't know if it's biblical or English or whatever, that pride goeth before the fall. Where does that come from?
Pride, Christian.
Yeah.
What is it?
It's in the New Testament. Pride goeth or comes before the fall. In other words, yes, look what I've done, and look at all these. And that pride is a sure indication that you're going to fall into the manhole without the cover on it at some point, or there's going to be a problem. And yet, we see we're proud, or I say. And then you give the class, and I think, boy, that was a really good class. and then you catch the crazy mind doing things like that, and then you go, oh no, Krishna, unless you're kind to me, what hope do I have?
Thank you.
please take prasadam. It's always a shock when the lights come on. Why is this? Hare Krishna.
His friend.
My friend?
Was very happy. Did you mention him? He was happy. And said, very clearly.
Who are you? Who is this?